Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day. And welcome to episode number 138 of the podcast, God Beyond the Bible, the podcast created by seekers and for seekers. And Trayson, do we have any shout outs?
We do, and I'm trying to get my paper loose here. Our shout outs are to Esther and Matiki, Quez, and to our listeners in Hungary. We are really glad to have you guys on board.
Yes, and what you said, I think at one point there, we were like
number 59 on Apple's Religion and Spirituality podcast in Hungary, and that's just awesome to us. I'm not going to lie.
For sure, and we're not about, we don't just check the numbers and see how we're... Folks, we're not getting paid a dime.
No.
We're spending our own money to do this, have done this for 3 years. We're not trying to build up a following. We're not trying to build an organized religion. We're not trying to do any of that. So you shouldn't have any reason to think, what are these people up to?
Yeah.
What's their game plan? This is not, as you can tell by the way we talk and the way we do these, there's very little. There's very little organization to this. It's just something that we feel like needs to be done. Tabitha, do you have a quote for us?
I do. This week it's from Franklin D. Roosevelt. He said, "There are many ways of going forward, but only one way of standing still."
Ooh.
Well, that is true. And I've heard other people kind of say, standing still is not standing still at all. Standing still is losing ground because everything else is going forward.
Yep.
It's true.
Around you. Well, our discussion topic for this week is difficulties of leaving the church. I think we've been leading up to that with the last two episodes, and we've talked about this before. But we're basically going to talk about the personal emotions associated with leaving the church, because we do know that spiritual awakening, the things that we're talking about in this podcast, usually put you in conflict with the organized church if you talk about them, unless you just go sit there and keep your mouth shut and don't say a word and go through the motions and go out. If you participate in any way, you're going to get in conflict, because I know this for a fact, because I know that of too many people that have been through, myself, that have been through this. But we're going to talk about the difficulties and mostly the emotional things that are involved in leaving the church. Now, we've done a couple of episodes on exiting the organized church. And as we mentioned in the last episode last week on taking control of our own spirituality, in our opinion, the single most difficult task in taking control of our own spirituality is questioning the long-held teaching of the church of the Bible being a single divine infallible work instead of the collection of works of real human beings writing about their personal experience and their pursuit of God. The church's stance leaves no room for inconsistencies in the text concerning the character of God and how He interacts with humanity. Discuss why you think this is such an important step, yet so difficult. We talked about this in the last episode.
I feel like it's implied that God wrote the Bible with His very own hands, almost, and that to question the divinity of the Bible is really the equivalent of questioning the very existence of God.
Well, if you make the Bible and the character of God one and the same.
Yes.
Then anything you question would be questioning the divine. The Catholics say, and I should have done a little more research so I could give you, but they have like a constitution, what would be in our church a constitution. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. They have a code that they live by, this code. And one of their codes, and I'm just paraphrasing here because I remember reading it years ago, and I can remember really railing against this years. But here's the Catholic's stance. The Catholic stance, some of our Catholic friends can give us, you know, tell us where to find us. But the Catholic stance is this. If there's a conflict, and this is me paraphrasing, if there is a question, if there's a discussion, if there's a conflict, and the conflict comes between tradition and scripture, you always go with tradition.
Tradition wins out.
Tradition wins. I guess that's a good way of keep from anything. Well, here's the way we did. I mean, you know.
And that's the way we've always done it. By golly, that's the way we're going to keep doing it.
So why do you think that is so? We've talked about this a lot. Why is it so difficult to get over that one little, getting over the church's stance for no inconsistencies?
Indoctrination. I mean, honestly.
Because it's not little. Your entire religious life is built around this book. This is the book. This book has all the answers. Well, this book tells you about God. God speaks to you through this book. This book is it.
The Christian religion is put all of its eggs in that basket, right?
Yes.
So you've got to protect that basket.
Mm-hmm. At all costs.
Don't let that basket get tipped. Once a person has come to some reconciliation of the role of the Bible and accepts the inconsistencies in the opinions of the individuals who contributed to that collection of works, this likely puts us then at odds with the church, since for the most part, this is the single foundation on which the entire Christian religion has built its organization. Do you know of any sect or denomination that is tolerant to questioning the infallibility of the Bible as a single divine work?
What'd you find, Tabby?
I mean, I Googled a couple, and Episcopal and Methodist were at the top of the list, but I can't really attest. I don't know. And it may vary from what I read, it could vary.
Like, now you're talking like about the that they're tolerant to
that. They kind of leave it up to each church to decide how infallible the Bible is.
I found the Lutherans and the Methodists that don't believe that the Bible is the literal word of God. But again, I kind of went like you. It seems to be church to church. Y'all
but
decide what you want to believe.
I started running into problems with definition. Like infallible, okay, it's not infallible, but it is the... What is that other
inerrant
word? Inerrant.
Yes. Okay, well, that's
But they were saying, no, we believe that it is fallible, but it is the inerrant word of God. And I'm like, well, how can it be one without the other?
I tend to believe that it's because they have their own versions.
Inerrant means no errors. Now, exactly. Now, we could say, yeah, that's the way it was really written. There's no errors there.
So I think it's kind of just, it kind of felt like smoke and mirrors to me. Yeah. I mean, it felt like, well, we're going to
draw you in.
You're talking about semantics.
Yeah.
It's coming down to semantics. In your experience, are these inconsistencies the reason there is an exodus from the modern organized church? And that some that are leaving opt for no spirituality as opposed to those who are leaving because they're taking control of their own spirituality, as we talked about in the last
one. I have asked people face to face before, how can you tell me that you believe in God if you don't believe in the Bible?
Yeah.
I mean, and I kind of cringe, and I'm going to say this, and guys, this is strictly my opinion. I really cringe now at things like the... you know, pledge allegiance to the Bible. Uh-huh. It really just gives me a queasy feeling at this point in my life.
And that is, yeah, a lot of people didn't think, and we, you know, just took that for granted. Grew up in Bible school, and even those little kids, I pledge allegiance to the Bible, God's holy word. Will make it a lamp unto my feet, a light unto my path, hide its words in my heart that I may not sin against God.
Is that not indoctrinated into you?
And pledging allegiance to that.
I think that we don't give enough credit to the fact that we have to sometimes mourn the death of our religion to accept the spirituality. You have to go through those stages. I went through an angry stage. I went through a grief stage where I just felt like... And I even questioned, okay, maybe I don't believe in anything. Maybe that's where I'm at. Maybe there's nothing.
And let me just tell you, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
No.
There's absolutely nothing to say, well, what do I really believe myself that's from me, that's absolutely me? What is it? Because the church muddies the water. Religion, period, muddies the water. You know what fits and what you just instinctively, inherently know that what fits. You go, yes, that is right. But then when you start discussing that, with other things, no, that can't be, that's not right, because, and even though it fit right in that slot in your spirit so well, and then you get encounter someone else and they start wanting to make you doubt that does. Now we talked about, you know, some are leaving the church opting for no. There's, let's be honest, there's always a great turnover in the church.
Oh, there's absolutely. Always,
I mean, how many times I've pastored for all those years and you'd see families come through, and you would be guessing, is this family going to stick? Are these people going to stick? I could usually tell in the first few weeks, often the first time they attended. Do you know what's amazing? The people who maybe come and visit your church and they just, oh, this is what I've been looking for there, and you never see them again.
So is it the people that just kind of quietly sneak in the back every morning, and those the ones that stick around?
You just never know. But every one of them are seeking something. Mm-hmm. Every one of them are seeking something. Are we being presumptuous when we say that spiritual awakening usually leads to conflict and a walking away from the organized church? I mean, are the cases of those who become enlightened and awakened and remain active in the church rare?
I would think it was rare, but you know, there might be those who stick it out and just try to.
I am sure that there are awakened individuals in the church, just like everywhere else, particularly maybe some of the more liberal congregations. I know that there are many enlightened individuals that have flocked to places like the Universal Unitarians that still offer a semblance of church, but it's not really a religious.
Well, and I think our Methodists, they're kind of liberal in their views, aren't they? More open, maybe?
But let me just say, the Methodist Church is very structured in its leadership.
Yeah, because they have a bishop.
It's all passed down from above. You, as a local congregation, you know, you talk about the liberties of the local, but the local congregation does not get to choose its pastor or how long he's there or how long he's there. And you can, that's what people in the Methodist tell me. So we can get somebody that we just love, that they're just great and the church is doing good. And for whatever reason, the Methodist will say, okay, their time's up. We're sending you somebody else. And said, you may get someone that gets up there and just dry reads from the material.
I feel
and you've got them just as long as you've got. So you see,
I feel like if you're truly awakened, if you have that enlightenment, you have to be very strong in what you believe to be able to continue in a church that is adamant about.
I think for me, it's really hard to, you reach that point in your journey, I think, or for me at least, where I was no longer willing to water down or dilute myself. Mm-hmm. To be able to sit through services in an organized where I'm going, I don't believe in this anymore. And I can't make myself go back and sit through this knowing that I don't believe in it.
But you know, that's something, and our listeners out there, if you're listening, email us or drop us a note, comment. If you are enlightened and still in the active in a church, especially in a church that doesn't agree with what you believe, let us know how that works.
Tell us
for
about
you and
it.
Tell us. I would love to hear your experience.
I am finding that more of them are landing in the Catholic Church.
Really?
I think even Rob Bell himself.
Now, see,
isn't he active in the remained active? One of his books, he indicated that he remained, went back and remained.
I'm not going to lie, I don't know much about the Catholic, but I would have thought they were very structured. But I guess
it is, but yeah, I don't know.
That's interesting.
I will remember one of the things that he wrote, and I can't remember which book it was in, because I've read a couple of different ones of his book. Where Rob Bell said that he had put together, that he and a group of different religions had put together an inter-religious, inter-faith conference where they come together, and we're going to try to, you know, we're going to talk about the you know, trying to make society better, mm-hmm. using our religious influence to just make this a better society. Right. And he said somebody come and whispered to him. They were up in heaven and said, "There, you know, there's a protest going on outside." When you guys said there's outside the building, there's a big protest going on out there. And, of course, Rob Bell was representing the Christian, mm-hmm. if I, you know, in this inter-religious thing, interfaith thing. And he said, "I can't tell you how it felt when I found out that those out there protesting were Christians."
Of
it was
course.
The church that was out there protesting that inner faith.
Yeah.
Speaking of your own personal experience, why can't, or why are you not willing to be an active participant of the organized church since your spiritual awakening? I think we've probably covered that, but
I was going to say, I talked about it in the last episode. I can't sit and let my spirit disagree with what I'm hearing and just continue to sit there. It gives me unrest.
And it goes all the way.
There is that part of peace in you that goes, if I go, I'm going to struggle to water down and dilute my beliefs. I'm going to cause a conflict. Mm-hmm. And I don't need to do that to the people who are still getting something
and
out of the services.
What about like my friend that told me, you know, he goes there and they're the pastor. It's one of those sermons where you people, the world's in the condition it's in because of you people. You're not
First
doing what you're
all,
supposed to be doing. The outrage. See, we talked about the outrage.
And I don't like to be preached at. I hate it when you hear are doing this and
I mean, often they'll soften it and say, if we as the church, if we were doing,
you don't want your toes stepped on?
I'm so sick of that. That just, you know, I've heard people say, well, if I don't go there and it feels like I've been, if I ain't been just roughshod over and feel like I've been beat up, then I haven't been. And I'm thinking,
and that's heartbreaking.
I don't
want to
go.
It?
And you enjoy that, do you? Can that we say sadist or what? Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, you enjoy that, do you?
Yeah.
You find that that's... But see, you're programmed to think that's what you're supposed to. You're in the right place. If you walk out feeling guilty and ashamed of yourself, you're in the right place.
Yep.
Talk about your experience and emotions associated with leaving the church.
Oh, man, there was some brokenheartedness, honestly. Because the last church we attended, the people were great. I loved the people as individuals, but there was also this like a freeing feeling to be able to walk out and just, this is what I believe, this is what I think, I don't have to have your approval and I don't have to live within your confines.
Mine, you know, with having two, I had two kids, still have two kids, but they were at that age where that was a major part of their social life was being in church. And so I tried to continue, but you know, I just found myself getting more and more lost and more angry. And I finally just had to take that step and say, okay, I don't care what people say. I don't care how many looks I get. I don't get care
I'm
how
not
many times
be
I'm
guilted.
Asked. I am going to be who I am.
Well, and I actually found myself feeling sympathetic, feeling sorry for the people that just sat there like cattle. Herded in, you know, or I don't know, that's not a good, but just zombies or, you know, it's just.
I've got to be here till noon. Got to be here till noon.
How difficult was it to adjust to simply not attending? Let's don't talk about anything, but just to the adjustment to, if, especially if you're a person that Sunday was all about getting up on Sunday morning, going through all the routines and getting up and all the.
And I felt
not having to go was awesome because I'm not going to lie. Getting up and having to get ready and get the kids ready for church was nothing but a stressful event.
Did you go through about a month into feeling a little bit guilty, like maybe you should be getting up and doing something?
You do, but you know.
Because I did.
Nice
I dealt with that.
In.
But then I gradually really began to enjoy my Sundays as a real day of rest. My husband and I watch movies. We hang out. We eat breakfast, whatever we want to do.
You know what I did the first few weeks? I actually drove around. Because I'd never had this opportunity to do it. I actually drove around and would actually count cars in the parking lots of churches and stuff to see what was going on outside my little circle. And I found out it was pretty much the same. And I think I've attended a church service one time.
I guess I have not attended any. I think our strangest, I still have those moments where we'll drive by a church and I'll go, I wonder what kind of funerals going on there, and my husband will go, babe, it's Sunday. Like, oh yeah, never mind.
Did you go through a period of not reading the Bible at all?
I think that started before I quit the church. I mean, I'm just being honest with
when
you.
When we finally exited the church, I went for about a year that I don't think I prayed. I didn't read the Bible. I was very unspiritual at that point because I didn't really know what it meant.
Non-spiritual or non-religious?
It was non-religious. But I really didn't know where to start to be spiritual at that point. So it was kind of just, I'm tired of all of this. I think that outrage fatigue syndrome had, and I was just exhausted. I was emotionally exhausted.
I think most of the people that I taught, I didn't mean to cut you off, but most of the people that I talk to, a year's pretty common. I hear that all the time. You know, I didn't read my Bible for about a year. I didn't pray in traditional sense of prayer for about a year. I did. And in any other situation, we would find that incomprehensible. But let me ask you this other question. If the Bible wasn't brought to you in the form of the church service, would you have read it in the last year?
No.
Would you have read it in the last year we're in church?
Dragging it out to study my Sunday school lesson felt like a chore. And I'm still, I don't know the Bible from front to back. You and Trayson are much more knowledgeable about, but now I can read it with interest because I understand what it really is.
Just like
instead of trying to think, okay, I'm supposed to read this and get some enlightenment. I'm supposed to get some kind of spiritual awakening out of this. And I never did.
My husband had this dream forever that he wanted to read the Bible front to back. My husband's not a big reader. So guess who got to read out loud the Bible, you know, one or two chapters a night. And of course, I'm not going to lie, we skipped a lot of the genealogies.
You didn't jump Jehoshaphat begat so-and-so begat.
We did. I skipped to the end. But, you know, just sitting and reading the Bible cover to cover as far as, you know, a few chapters at a time and just reading the stories for what they are gave me a much different picture than it did having them pulled out and tied into a lesson.
Well, just like we did a 5-week series on the book of Job, that was super enlightening for me and to me, because then you can go back and read that story and go, this is a way that this has never been presented to me.
Yes.
And it really seems like this is what's happening here. And this has never been, because think about it, the church is kindly bound. How could you teach the lesson that organized religion was failing? As it did in the case of Job.
It's true.
Did some people who you felt closely connected to when you were active in the church seem to get distant or treat you differently after you left?
The people from our last church, I can't tell, have really treated me
any
different. No,
but as far as people involved in religion overall, I kind of get that.
I found myself getting, like, people would call and, "Where's your dad going to church now? Where's your dad pastoring at?" For a long time, I was like, "He not anywhere right now." You know, I was embarrassed to admit it, and for myself. But I can tell you, I have experienced firsthand what it feels like for people to want you to come into their church and be active in their church, and the difference in the way they treat you when they finally realize
you're not going to.
You're not going to.
It's not happening. Huge.
It's like, okay, these are lost cause. Let's go hunt somebody else. Let's go hunt somebody
else. And trying to come up with those really vague, like, we might come by one Sunday, but not this Sunday.
How difficult was it when you first left and people would come and ask you or call you up and ask you where you're attending church now?
Do you feel guilty saying, like, We're not really interested in going.
Usually it's the same. Well, we're just taking a break right now.
Yeah.
We've been in a long time and we're stepping back and taking a break. You don't want to say, I'm not going to. I don't intend to.
I don't want to go
but
to
you
your
know,
church.
Now I can look back and at some of the comments, the little snide remarks I would get and stuff, I can laugh at it because it's...
It had
nothing to do with me personally.
I had a woman tell me, "Well, you need to get back in church because you need that church family in your life." And I'm like, "But I'm okay."
But I want to ask, so you can't be the same friend you were outside?
Apparently
you
not.
So what are they implying? What's the implications of that? The implications is, well, you're going to miss this when something bad happens in your life. You're really going to miss this. Well, the backup to that question was, is it easier to deal with now than it first was, the people asking you, where are you attending church? And, you know, the guilt, is it easier now?
Yeah, it's super easy for me. I'm comfortable with me. I'm happy where I'm at.
My husband's like, we hike a lot. Sometimes that's church. I mean, you know, it's wherever we may be when the moment strikes, church is church.
Due to your church programming, did you go through a period where you kind of expected something bad to happen to you and your family as a result of not attending church?
Am I the only one that kind of halfway expected my business and my marriage to suddenly fail if we just quit attending church completely?
No, I mean, I've told you guys, my whole religious experience has been being afraid of stepping wrong because something was going to happen. And here I have quit everything and I am insurance, not in the church.
You quit paying on the insurance policy.
I did. And so, you know, I'm like waiting for the other shoot a fall, you know.
Tom T. Hall, yeah. It's hard. And but you know what? None of it happened.
And now I can laugh because, you know, when I was in church, good and bad things happen. And now that I'm not in church,
exactly the same rate. Yeah. At exactly the same frequency, right?
Yeah.
Since we live in a rural area in the heart of the Bible Belt, do you find yourself wishing there was a support group for individuals who are taking control of their own spiritual pursuits?
Sometimes I really do. It would be, it's so nice when we get a comment or a message or an email from one of you out there listening.
Because
it's like, oh yeah, you guys are out there. It's not just us sitting here at this table.
And where we're at, we miss the, you know, we're in the heart of the Bible Belt. And I miss the fellowship. I miss just talking with other people.
Yes.
Who, like-minded people, you know.
What would the structure, let's talk about that, we talk about, well, it'd be nice to have this group that, we, you know, that we're just, it was a spiritual group, not a church group, but what would the structure of that group be like, keeping in mind that most of these groups make the mistake of patterning their group after the organized church, resulting in the same problems the organized church experiences.
I have thought about this a lot.
Let's hear it.
You know how people unschool their kids? Have you heard of unschooling?
Yes.
They pick a subject, they go with it. If they're interested, if they're not, they don't. There's really no structure. We need to unchurch. If you just have a group of people sitting around a fire pit outside.
And everybody gets to talk about what they're... Do we need to have a talking feather where each person can pass it?
Conversation is all you need. Because conversations can lead to... I have learned so much from other people through just general... We don't need prayer. We don't need a pre-rehearsed song. We don't need any of the structure that comes with church. We just need to be surrounded. That's what true fellowship is having like-minded people,
and
open-minded
to have
people
who will cheer you on your journey, even if maybe they're in a different place or they're farther down the line than you are. And they go, yeah, man, you might be onto something there.
But don't you think there's always that danger that it's going to, because of our, see, the Protestant church, when it came out under Martin Luther, they knew nothing but 1,000 years of the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. That was all part of their culture. When they withdrew, basically, from the Catholic Church, other than a few points of doctrine, they basically just structured it themselves just, mm-hmm. And matter of fact, you can't tell the Protestant church from the Catholic church except for some of their doctrines. But as far as the way they're structured, there's not much difference, is there?
No, but I think that's what I'm saying, too. We get back in that mentality of the only way we can discuss spiritual things is to be in church or be like church.
Let's lose your fire pit thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, it gets to where you're having 100 people and you're having to build 4 fires. Around 4 fire pits of the, and someone says the weather's going to get bad. We need to, if we're going to keep on doing this, we need to have a place that we can get in. We need a building that we can get in and get out of this.
You are banned. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I'm just saying. You know, natural course, and our natural tendency is when we do that, what are we going to do? We're going to pattern it after the organized church.
We're going
to
need money.
Yeah, we gotta pay, so we need to have a treasury, and you see how that can just go south so quick. And I'm not saying we don't need to do that. I'm saying how can we do that? Because then people, well, boy, I know some people that really come, but they can't sit outside at night because it's so, it gets so cool and damp, and they've got our, I've heard that through the church. I know people that love to come, but we have the service so late, it's after dark, and they can't drive after. You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
You're going to find all of the same. How do we break that? How do we break?
But I think you have
because
to be,
if you want to do something, you will do it.
I think you have to be aware, and I'm not saying it would be easy, but I do. I mean, I miss the fellowship. I miss being around other people.
Oh, I have dozens of people all the time. I say all the time. There's, you know, a few people every week that'll say, "Oh, I just miss. I wish you were teaching somewhere." And I'm thinking, I've pastored for 35 years. You attended twice.
Right.
All those times I was. Man, I'm not wanting to offend the people because I know you say that because you love me, and I realize that if somebody's listening, that stuff.
But if
I'm
you
saying,
really don't want to hear me,
I am almost just so afraid it'll turn back into.
But you know, and maybe
I hesitate to do it.
Maybe we're trying to make it too hard because I know we have music practice every week. Mm-hmm. And I have learned things spiritually just from that time of fellowship we have before we play music. Yeah. Someone will say something and it's like, whoa,
back that up and, you know, come back again.
So maybe we just try to make it too hard. Maybe we try to make it too structured.
Maybe, I mean.
I think that's what we're getting down to. It's when we start putting structure to it, we start organizing.
Yeah.
It's when we start organizing, because organizing things are made to get a group of people to live by the same, to get all the people to have the same interest and share the same, that share a common interest, to do it in a way that's structured and organized. And you think that's where it all gets out of.
Perhaps the seekers out there need to connect with other seekers and go on their four-wheeler rides or on their hikes or on their walks.
Oh, I think that's why you're seeing so many groups like the motorcycle group, Christian Motorcycle.
Yeah.
I think they're using their interest, their common shared interest in the world to be a common shared. And I'm not knocking that.
No.
I'm not going to knock that. But a lot of those groups seem to overcompensate by being super legalistic too.
Yes.
Super, super legalistic. Well, it's time for our non-expert opinion. And your personal opinion based on your personal experience. Yeah, I don't know what else you could base it on. What advice might you give a person who came to you and said they were going through a spiritual awakening and knew their church participation and attendance was bringing conflict in their life, but they're afraid because a big part of their life has been the church?
You know what? Guys, it's okay. It's okay to walk away. The world's not going to come crashing down on you because you're spending your Sunday at home or out wherever
you
want to
be
on Sunday morning.
I'm still going to be financially okay if I'm not giving back to God.
God's not going to take all the rest away. Everything that's going to happen is going to happen regardless of where you spend your Sundays. So spend it somewhere you enjoy.
And I say lean into the experience.
Yeah.
Journal is a great, journaling is perfect, and just stay true to yourself, whatever you believe.
That's it.
With those thoughts, as always, until next time, may the unconditional grace, peace, and love of the Most High be on, in, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.